In my last video on this subject, I mentioned that due to the US government shutdown ending, NASA would very quickly process and release the data they had been automatically collecting with their spacecraft during the shutdown regarding the interstellar object 3I Atlas. And did they ever make some observations? And more will come as the data continues to be processed and the papers authored, which also will probably unfold very rapidly as the scientists of the world descend on the data pile and see what they can tease out. It'll be a busy end of the year for this subject, but there's quite a bit of raw data already coming out. And it doesn't end there. The object is now visible again to both amateur and some professional telescopes. Indeed, some of the most useful imagery that's come out recently is streaming in from amateur astronomers with nice telescopes and equipment. Buy a decent set of gear and anyone can observe this object, just not with the naked eye. Too dim for the eye, but not the moderately sized telescope. As an aside, this is something that amazes me about the modern age. As you probably either know or can guess, I am an amateur astronomer, but an old school one going back to the 1980s with telescopes and visual astronomy, or frankly, film cameras. I grew up with visual astronomy, Dobsonian-mounted hand-pointed reflector telescopes, bulky film cameras mounted on telescopes with electric clock drives, and so on. Back in the day, in the early 1990s, if this object had come through then, say 1991, the best I could have ever given you regarding 3I Atlas and my means back then was a pencil sketch I would have made through an eyepiece, and that's important to remember here. That was how it was done, and we've come a long way. For people with more money than a high school student, it was not so great long exposure camera images through telescopes. Sometimes those were good, sometimes they were fuzzy dots. Comets at the distance and brightness of Atlas are hard to photograph, still to this day. And that's why the NASA images aren't mind-blowing to some, but more on that in a bit. Compare that to what's out there today though. Excellent professional CCD cameras, smart telescopes that can locate themselves through GPS and then slew around to whatever object you want to look at by computer and so on. If you put in the money and time, and then use computers to stack images that allow amateurs to produce scientifically useful astronomical photography, and indeed photometry in general, that rivals or exceeds what professional astronomers and telescopes could do in the 80s. Indeed, a large portion of data taken after Kepler for Tabby Star was done by amateur variable star observers, and it was very good data indeed. But it's different for NASA. With 3I Atlas, NASA was in an unusual position, as was ESA. Humans have scientific assets all over the solar system right now, which has basically allowed them to watch 3I Atlas essentially from the moment of discovery and now onward for months longer, seeing almost its entire detectable time in our solar system. There never really was a time when it was completely out of view, even if we couldn't see it from Earth. The probes at Mars and elsewhere could, but just barely. I warned of this in one of my earlier videos on this comet, and now that the US government shutdown has ended, and within just a few days of that, NASA has begun releasing more of that imagery. Before we get into it, however, there will invariably be those, and there are, that say, well, why are the images so blurry? Surely we could do better. The answer is very simple. You can't. When you're in a random position, take a good shot, unless you're ridiculously lucky. If you can't compose the shot well, chances are you won't get a great shot visually. The cameras involved here also were not designed to take pictures of an object very distantly in another part of the solar system from where the spacecraft is. You could liken this to a cell phone camera. You won't have a problem taking a nice selfie on the beach in broad daylight because that camera is designed for it, and you've put yourself in the perfect position for the shot. Try having someone take your picture with the same camera from 4 miles down the beach at 3 in the morning, and it's not going to come up with much. What it's not designed to do so much is take a decent picture at night and at great distance. Though some cell cameras can do it moderately well these days, but distance is a real problem. But try to image 3I Atlas with a cell phone. You can't. It's too dim and distant without a lot of help from a telescope. Your camera is not good enough with the light collecting ability of that lens, because you're doing something it was not designed to do. You're trying to make toast with a garden hose. You cannot do it with a few millimeters of lens. You need inches or many centimeters, and that is a physical reality. But you can take a picture of the moon with your phone because it's close, enormous, and bright. But even then, not as good as you would get from a telescope built for the job. Space-based cameras also work on these rules too, because the rules that govern them are the physical realities of cameras and what they were intended for. And we have a lot of those cameras right now in space, as imperfect as they are for 3i Atlas. The NASA missions so far involved, there may yet be more, include more from Hubble and James Webb coming. The best images will be there. They're designed for this sort of thing to varying degrees. But also SphereX, Swift, Test, Perseverance, Maven, MRO, Lucy, Europa Clipper, Psyche, Punch, Parker Solar Probe, Stereo, and SOHO Mini in conjunction with ESA through partnerships. That's a lot of eyes in space. So now to the results so far. One to mention is the Perseverance rover on the surface of Mars. I'm surprised this mission was able to get an image at all. It was designed to look at the surface of Mars, around it, in broad daylight. It did catch the comet, and actually this image came out several weeks ago. But for the other spacecraft during the shutdown, there was much more. The first to mention here is the Psyche mission, which is on its way to the asteroid 16 Psyche. This mission is optimized to study the asteroid specifically because it's metal-rich. It's probably some kind of remnant of the outer core or lower mantle of a protoplanet that got shattered, but we just don't know yet. However, profiling this asteroid is basically seeding a future industry. This is exactly the type of asteroid someone might mine for rare metals, something we are getting closer and closer to economic viability each day. Psyche got a series of four images of Atlas on September 8th and 9th over 8 hours, and it was very distant, 33 million miles. So it's basically a dot moving across the sky. But it was the first image of its kind taken by the Psyche probe. And here are all four images stacked and blown up. Pixelated, but there's more. Just a week later, the Lucy spacecraft observed the object from the completely opposite perspective in the solar system. This is important. It lets you see the coma from different points of view, different angles. Imagine different views of runners doing Olympic track running from multiple different camera angles to see that you might learn something from that. In the case of the comet, it gave an interesting profile of the dust coming off it for comparison. Remember, this is material from another star system older than our own, and we cannot get that vantage point from Earth. Here, the spacecraft sees it backlit, but we do not from our current vantage point. Lucy's mission is to study Jupiter's Trojan asteroids, which are thought to be early material left over from the formation of the solar system. It was significantly further away from the object, 240 million miles, but has a higher resolution camera. And the images again were stacked, and you can see the comet's coma and tail. What's important here is that the comet's tail is pointing away from the sun. In this picture, the sun is to the left. This is expected cometary activity, though there still is evidence of an anti-tail spike, which is caused by preferential heating. Basically ice melting in the sunlight and blowing gas towards the sun as a result. Next is Maven. Now this is actually a spectrum, not a normal image, and it's screaming hydrogen. In several different ways, you can see the image is marked, because from Maven's perspective, it's seeing three hydrogen sources in its field of view. This is interesting because it's not too often that I see spectral data that's easy to explain in common terms for these videos. Here I can. The bright one on the right is Mars, the middle one is just normal interplanetary hydrogen floating around, and the blip on the left is the hydrogen signature of 3i Atlas. This really gives you a profile of water coming off 3i Atlas, how much is sublimating and flying off into space, and that in turn gives you some solid clues when building a composition profile of the object. What it's made of? Well, there's water here. The SOHO spacecraft, which is a collaboration between ESA and NASA, also got an image. SOHO is a venerable, highly successful spacecraft on level with the Hubble Space Telescope. SOHO has been studying the sun and solar wind since 1995, and it's still going 30 years later, and it actually proved to be unusually useful in comet research. It actually discovered over 5,000 of them in its own right. a lot of them plunging into the sun and disintegrating. One of the beauties of SOHO is that it's sitting at the Sun-Earth L1 Lagrange point, which gives us an uninterrupted view of the sun, which turned out to be a very long-term view. That certainly made the solar physicists happy, which is important because we get hit by solar storms, and those can knock out our power grids. Interestingly, this image was a long shot. There was a lot of talk about SOHO not having the capability to see the object at all. But the scientists got it, even though SOHO is not designed for this in quite this juxtaposition, and is working with old tech. But it got something. A fun thing to note here is why this object is named 3i Atlas. This is perhaps somewhat ominous when you think about it. So the designation 3i just means that it's the third interstellar object we have definitively identified. That alone tells you it's not from here. This formed in another star system entirely, in an unknown environment somewhere else in the galaxy. If that's not ominous enough, then comes the Atlas part. That telescope's acronym stands for Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System. Emphasis on last. This is the telescope that tells us when our extinction is imminent before we go out dinosaur style. But it actually is better than a last resort. It can see pretty far out, and has detected all sorts of stuff that doesn't threaten us. But at least we know about it, and it gives us a good shot at deflecting asteroids. But as a bonus to its mission, it can see and discover interstellar objects of interest like 3i. But I do find it somewhat goosebump-raising as a sci-fi author that, our last alert system for getting whacked by an asteroid found an object of interstellar origin. But this video gets even spookier in a bit. The data from the Parker Solar Probe is still coming in, and they caught something, as will be data from other spacecraft. It's fun to note that the human-launched Parker Solar Probe actually is moving faster than 3i Atlas, significantly so. So while Atlas was fast, it's worth putting it into perspective. It wasn't absurdly fast. Not as much as it could be, but fast enough to be interstellar. Parker Solar Probe, because of its extreme proximity to the Sun, however, cannot go interstellar. Too close, and too far into the Sun's gravity well. So the NASA spacecraft were able to get observations under far from ideal conditions. There's also this from HiRISE so far, but no one ever really expected jaw-dropping images because none of the stuff we have was designed for it, and all of it was in space before we ever even knew 3i Atlas existed. But there are things that can be gleaned from these observations that will come out over the coming weeks. What needs to happen is a dedicated mission that is designed to intercept and check out an interstellar object already sitting in space to position itself into the path of an incoming object. Let the object fly past our spacecraft and not catch up to it. As to the alien origin hypothesis, however, I leave you with this. That idea is basically dead and was only ever presented as a thought experiment and the media ran with it. But there is a chilling notion hidden in all of that. If there were an alien probe hiding in the solar system watching us, we just told them everything we possibly could about our capabilities of detecting and observing objects in interplanetary space of interstellar origin. Food for thought. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently wondering if 3i Atlas is the least bit concerned about insurance. You know, our asteroids are valuable, full of exotic metals, and if it hit one, well, who do we send the bill to? I wonder if insurance salesmen are a universal thing among alien civilizations, which would probably also mean that lawyers are as well. Sued by aliens, served by a SETI signal. And be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channel for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.